Ron Davis, my sincere condolences regarding the loss of your son, Jordan.
Thank you.
Today is the 10-month anniversary of his death. It was last Thanksgiving weekend when the incident occurred. It was at a gas station on the South Side. For those who aren't familiar with what took place, his accused killer, Michael Dunn, in court last week. His trial has been pushed back some months, correct?
That's correct. They said they're probably the first week or second week of February.
Now, just the other day, Jordan's mother and Trayvon's mother, Trayvon Martin's mother, were scheduled to testify up in Washington about the issues around Stand Your Ground in Florida. What was your reaction to the fact that that had to be postponed because we had another mass shooting incident in this country at the Navy Yard?
It's just piling on, you know, it's just more shootings there. Woke up and found out there were shootings in Nairobi, in the mall. I mean, you know, it just goes on, and it doesn't stop. And the federal government seems that, you know, because it's the state law, they can't do anything about Stand Your Ground. But, you know, other things that were state laws, they've enacted federal guidelines, you know, to do something about it. So only when it hits home, probably, you know, does the federal government step in.
It's 549-2937 to join the conversation this morning here on First Coast Connect as we speak with Ron Davis. He is the father of 17-year-old Jordan Davis, the unarmed teen who was killed last Thanksgiving at a Southside gas station. Before this tragedy affected your family, Ron, did you have any thoughts at all one way or the other about the Stand Your Ground statute?
Didn't even know about the Stand Your Ground statute until Trayvon Martin's death, you know, then I think everybody in Florida started talking about it. So, you know, didn't give it a thought. And probably most of the, you know, nation didn't give it a thought until all these things started happening. And now everybody's kind of on board with it. They know how insidious it is. And they know that it shields the person that murders your child, somebody that murders your family member. And they stand behind this like cowards. So we do have to repeal the Stand Your Ground law, and I'm firmly against Stand Your Ground. And I want the public to know that I'm not against guns. You know, I'm not against the lawful gun owners, people with concealed weapons. I'm not against you. You know, so, you know, sometimes I hear that, and he said, well, Ron, you know, guns don't kill people. People kill people. And you're right. You know, guns don't kill people. Guns in the correct hands and, you know, lawful gun owners. I applaud you for being lawful gun owners and being responsible gun owners. But it's the ones that are out here that we need to make sure that the irresponsible gun owners cannot hide behind Stand Your Ground.
How do you think Michael Dunn, your son's accused killer, will he attempt to try to use this statute that he was standing his ground when he goes to trial?
I think he's just going to dangle it out there. I mean, just like the Zimmerman trial, it's just dangled out there. It's like that gorilla that sits there, and you know that if all else fails, maybe I can do it this way. But we had many witnesses, fortunately, you know, to his act, and I don't think that Stand Your Ground is going to come into play. But what I basically, not only am I fighting, of course, for my son Jordan, but I'm fighting for all the other kids and all the other people that have victims of gun violence, that if there are no witnesses, how do you fight this? You know, because that's the main thing. They look at the mind of the shooter, which is totally incorrect, because the victim should have a say, and Stand Your Ground does not give the victim a say.
And we'll go to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937. We're beginning the hour here on First Coast Connect as we welcome to Studio 5 Ron Davis. He's the father of slain Jacksonville teen Jordan Davis. Tell us about your son.
You know, when you look back and you look at all the times that you start spinning, you know, on the lake and, you know, on a pontoon boat and him playing around and, you know, go fishing with him. And, you know, you go further and further back. I think through this whole process of 10 months, I started out when I spoke of Jordan, was speaking of when he was 15, 16, and 17. As I go through the 10 months, I think I keep going further and further back, you know, because I think that's where it all starts. You know, my attorney, John Phillips, has a small little 2-year-old, I believe. And, you know, you start going all the way back, you know, the things that you did every Christmas, you know, the things, the first time he touched snow, you know, and put snow in his mouth and thought it was ice cream. You know, you go all the way back. And I think as parents, any parent out there, when you start, you know, thinking about your child, you don't start at the teenager level. You think about all the things you did to bring him up that far. And so I just want everybody in Jacksonville to realize that he's just like your kid, your family member, that he was brought up the right way. And he was a happy kid, and he likes to do silly things. He liked to, you know, jet ski and all these kind of things that kids do. And, you know, like to dress funny, put on funny little hats. You know, they wear the snapback caps, as they call them. And, you know, all the great things, you know, go to the bowling alley, look at girls, go skating, look at girls. It was all about looking at the girls and having fun talking about it, and just, you know, just sitting as a parent, as a father, just talking to your son about what life has in front of you. And when somebody comes and snatches all that away from you, it just tears you apart.
Sure. And it's every parent's worst nightmare. And every parent's heart goes out to you and Jordan's mom when you hear about what happened. Michael Dunn, the accused killer, told police he felt threatened by your son and the group of kids he was with because they were playing loud music. That's what the defense will try to argue, correct?
Yeah, you know, that's the cop-out, because now you're looking at, number one, you know, the kids were there first. They were already playing their loud music, and you drive up in a car, and you say to your girlfriend, you know, which she, you know, had a deposition and said, "I hate that thug music," is what he said to her. You know, so right away, if you hate that thug music, you could have pulled into another spot right then and there. That's the first contact, is that you hate that thug music. For some reason, that type of music that they were playing to you is thug music. Okay. So that's profiling right there, you know. So then your girlfriend gets out of the car. She goes into the convenience store. And you're so annoyed that you decide to roll down your window and say something to the kids to turn their music down. Now, you know, you're... all of a sudden, you know, now you come to their space and you're going to tell them to turn their music down, you know. So now, you know, they don't respond the way you want them to respond. And, you know, there's some verbal back and forth. You roll your window back up and you're sitting there and you're mad. You know, you've had a tough day, maybe you're mad. And all of a sudden the kids are hollering through the window. Now, no kid gets out of the car. Nobody attacks you. Nobody touches you. Nobody touches your car. And all of a sudden,
this is what police tell you happened.
Oh, yeah. And this is the testimony, the deposition, this the interrogation tapes that came out with Michael Dunn. And he even said that he rolled his window back down and said to them, "Are you talking to me? You're not going to talk to me that way. Why, if you're threatened, why are you rolling your window down, making, again, additional contact?" So the first two contacts with the kids are you making contact. They didn't roll their window down and make contact with you. And so once you say that, then you go, you get your gun. You know, you think that this situation calls for a gun because verbally they're not doing what you're telling them to do. Verbally they're saying things that you don't like, but that calls for a fatality. That calls for a gun. And so you roll down your window and you start shooting in a car of teenagers, 17-year-olds, to kill them because they're not doing and turning the music down because you want the music down. And is that where we are as a country? Is that where we are as humans, that when somebody doesn't do what we want them to do, even though there's no bodily threat, that we just start shooting? And you shoot 9 or 10 times into a car of kids. As they're backing away, trying to get away from you, going a few yards, you're tracking them, and you shoot 2 more shots flush in the back of the vehicle, trying to murder these kids. And you have the nerve to be a coward and try to stand behind a stand-your-ground law. You should just be punished. It shouldn't have gone on this long. We're going to come up on the 1-year anniversary of my son's death, which would be the 23rd of November, and you're still acting like a coward.
And emotional thoughts this morning from Ron Davis. He's our first guest this hour on First Coast Connect. Lots of calls coming into the show at 549-2937. Give us a call with your thoughts about Jordan Davis and Florida's Stand Your Ground law and the issue of gun violence in this country. Let's begin with Mark on the South Side. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Yes, Mr. Davis, I'd like to give you my condolences for your son on his anniversary. And also, I'd like to address two aspects of the Stand Your Ground law. First, it's the racial aspect, and the second is it's like the law of the last man standing. And usually, I believe, going back to the racial aspect, I think white people are going to be given the benefit of a doubt that they were threatened, whereas African Americans in the same position where they kill someone of an opposite race are not going to get that same benefit of the doubt. And I think that that's wrong, and that's what's emboldening a lot of people to stand your ground instead of averting a conflict.
That's Mark on the South Side. Thanks for the call, Mark. Critics of the Stand Your Ground law, including the student activist group the Dream Defenders, they staged a sit-in at the Capitol. They feel that the law unfairly targets African Americans. Ron Davis, the state legislature, and the governor disagree. They don't see any racial overtones to this law. They think it's fine the way it is. So, and the polling, I should also point out, a majority of Floridians approve of the law. How difficult a challenge in light of that, then, will it be for critics of the law to have it changed or even repealed?
I don't think a majority of the Floridians approve of the law. What happens is when you have people that are in power, like Governor Rick Scott, and you have the cronies that are in power, and they're the ones that are making decisions for the citizens of Florida. Nobody knocked on my door and asked me, did I approve of it? Melissa, nobody knocked on your door and asked you, did you approve of it? So you have these lawmakers that are, their campaigns are flooded with contributions by the NRA and the gun manufacturers, and they're the ones that's signing off on the law. So, you know, be real. It's not the citizens of Florida that sign off on the law. It's the legislators that are signing off on it. And they do us an injustice by offering themselves up just for campaign contributions to go ahead and sign off on something that so terribly affects their citizens.
John on the West Side, thanks for holding. John, you're on the air. Good morning. All right, John, give us a call back. And if you're just joining us, the number to connect with Ron Davis, Jordan Davis's dad, is 549-2937. Tom on the South Side's with us this morning. Good morning, Tom. How are you today?
Good morning. Fine. And yourself?
Great. Thank you.
Listen, I'm really sorry about this man's son. The man that shot him should be tried, but it has nothing to do with the Stand Your Ground law. A lot of people will hide behind this thing. The law itself, Senate Bill 436, it's a great law. It protects everybody. It has no racial overtones. This guy is a murderer, and he should be tried for that. And he shouldn't be allowed to stand behind a good bill. The bill was not repealed, and the Democrats' efforts to repeal the bill was defeated by a majority. So, you know, convict this guy, not on this law. He's just trying to hide behind it, and that's all I wanted to say.
And
thank you.
Thank you, Tom. That's Tom on the South Side. A listener emails the show with similar thoughts. Stand Your Ground is not a bad law. It's bad lawyers attempting to use it as a defense when it doesn't apply to the situation. What about their thoughts? Ron Davis.
The problem with the law is this. There's so much gray area. The first problem is that the victims and the victim's family, they don't get a voice. That's the main problem with Stand Your Ground. They go into the mind of the shooter and say, was the shooter, did they really feel threatened? Well, when you have two people that did something and no witnesses to the account, the only account that the judge, one judge, by the way, not a jury of your peers, but one judge, the only account he can listen to is the account of the shooter. That's what the problem with the law is, because the family, you know, and the attorney of the family, they have no say so. And if he gets off on a criminal basis, then on a civil basis, that gets wiped out. You can't even sue as a family member. You can't even sue the person for killing your loved one, because once they say Stand Your Ground is in effect, then that wipes out all the civil suits also. So, you know, the gray area is just, you know, it's just too much, because there's no way a judge without witnesses can say whether somebody was in the wrong or someone was in the right.
In the wake of George Zimmerman's acquittal, the jury told some media outlets that they did take the Stand Your Ground law into consideration. With regard to the prosecution of Michael Dunn here in Jacksonville, it's our understanding that State Attorney Angela Corey will personally prosecute Mr. Dunn. What are your thoughts about that? Of course, the Zimmerman trial was very high profile for the local state attorney's office. Now another high profile case is coming down the pike with the death of your son.
I think Angela Corey's office is going to do a good job, a much better job. I think it's unfair that they were brought into the Trayvon Martin case probably about 44 days after it happened, because the way, from what I understand, the prosecution works is when there's a death or whenever there's a crime, they send their officers to go out and, you know, they get all the information they can and they take all their pictures that they need to take. And they do everything from step one to step 100, you know. And in a case where everything else is done by the Sanford Police Department, and which they did apparently a terrible job, then what happens is you're coming, Johnny come lately. That's just like me. You know, since football just left yesterday, it's like in football, if you ask me to come up and mop up the situation, come in the third quarter, there's nothing I can do, you know, to mop up all the damage that had been caused in the first and second quarter. So I think it was unfair that she got all the heat for everything that happened. I mean, you know, she deserves some heat, but not all the heat for what happened in the Trayvon Martin case. I believe in this case, she was there from the start. Her officers were there from the start. They took, you know, investigative depositions and everything. So I think this is going to be an entirely different case.
Let's go to Frank in St. Augustine. Hey, Frank, thanks for your call. Go ahead.
Melissa, thank you for taking my call. Really enjoy the show. Mr. Davis, my heart goes out to you. I really can't imagine what you're going through.
Thank you.
I was wondering if I've heard through Melissa's show, parts of the Stand Your Ground law that seem reasonable, and I was wondering if it's your opinion if there are aspects of the law, or do you think it's like an all or nothing thing? I'm afraid that people like yourself who are in this situation who are going for this all or nothing just to completely abolish it, whether it would be a worthwhile cause to just try to change aspects of the law that seem reasonable.
All right. Thanks for that question, Frank.
Yes, thank you, Frank. I think that you're right. I think there's aspects of the law that is reasonable and that should stay in. And I think if they rewrite the law and take away the gray area, I think it would be a better law. So I'm glad you brought that to our attention.
How would the legislature do that? Because as you pointed out, with all the different perspectives and different innumerable varieties of the human experience, this law can be interpreted very differently depending on the circumstances and what was in the mind of the participants. How could it be rewritten in such a way as to eliminate a gray area?
The first thing that I would do is I would have either a six-panel jury or something like that instead of having one person make the decision. You know, a seven-panel jury, something, an odd number, maybe, you know. So that way you can get more than one person's interpretation of the facts, you know. Also, the family members, they should have an attorney to go out and do an investigation also so they can get their side in. You know, at this point, they don't have a chance to do that. All they do is look at what the shooter says, you know, and that could, you know, help that law. It shouldn't abolish the civil side of it. In other words, you know, if by chance, you know, they think the person wasn't liable criminally, then they should also have to face a jury and a civil trial.
Let's go to Omar on the West Side. Good morning, Omar. How are you today?
Hi, Melissa. I'm a long-time fan of yours.
Thanks.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Davis,
about
what went on. Things have not changed since slavery times. Race is embedded in a lot of things in our society. So some of the things that are in this law come from that and stem from that. And the people that wrote it know this. People who have guns and legal guns in the first place are mostly Caucasians, and they can carry it around legally in Florida. Concealed weapons and things like that. So, you know, some of them are just itching to shoot somebody. But once again, Mr. Davis, sorry. And you all have a good day.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's Omar on the West Side. Larry in Jacksonville. Good morning, Larry. Go ahead. Larry, give us a call back. Let's go down to Orange Park. James is on the line. Good morning, James. You're on the air.
Good morning. First of all, let me say thank you for allowing me to voice my opinion. And I sympathize with Mr. Davis for the loss of his son. It's an unfortunate situation. But I think what we have to realize is that this nation was founded on bloodshed. And it's going to continue. Well, what I'd like to say to Mr. Davis is I really sympathize with him in trying to get the law changed. But it will not change because it's not just based on the plain law. It's based on white supremacy in this apartheid nation of the United States of America and this apartheid state of Florida. So it's not just going to change because there's a law. White supremacy has to be wiped out. Thank you.
Okay, that was James down in Orange Park. Now, let me just say for a couple of callers that they either hung up, we couldn't get them on, they took a different view. They just don't agree that this law has racial aspects. They just see it as a strict self-defense statute that applies equally to everyone. What would you say to those who disagree? They just don't see race in this.
You know, as I've been reading over the last year, this country spent so much time and effort about race, you know. And as I read and find out that we're all from the continent of Africa, all of us, you know, then I read something else and it tells me that 99% of our DNA is the same and only 1% has to do with texture of hair and color of skin. And that 1% we fight and fuss so much over that 1%. Biologists have written papers, human biologists have written papers about we won't even study racial aspects anymore because it has nothing to do with biology, you know, and all these learned people, they have really just turned their nose up at the thing that we're fighting about, and that's color and race, because somewhere down the line when you look at light skin, brown skin, dark skin people of the earth, we all came from the same place, you know, but I think it's more that people want to be over somebody. Somebody has to be below us. And I think that's the mentality that we have to get rid of, is that we have to always look down on somebody. And I think in this country, that's why we allow people to be homeless. That's why we allow people to sit in our parks and be homeless and look dirty so we can feel better about ourselves. So we can say, well, they're on hard luck, so we might not be too bad because at least we have jobs, you know. And the rich people, they look at us as middle class and say the same thing to us and on and on and on because, you know, somebody has to be below us. You can't be the lowest in the barrel. And I think, you know, if we try equalism, maybe that's a new word, equalism, that we are all equal and we're all fighting to have everybody have a job. You know, we worry about Obamacare. Forget about just the aspects of Obamacare. I think the one that I like is that everybody deserves to have insurance. No matter how it's attained, everybody deserves to have insurance. That's the bottom line. To the lowest low, to the highest high, they deserve to have insurance. And we don't spread the wealth in this country. People come to this country and see the wealth, and then they see people laying on the street in cardboard boxes. I'm from New York City, and when I used to go to work in Manhattan, I go to work at 6 o'clock in the morning. And when you walk in the streets at 5 o'clock in the morning, you see people in cardboard boxes, you know, and they're trying to get things out of the trash can to eat. And we're the mightiest country, and we're the exceptional country. But we have people eating out of trash cans, and if you say, well, the only reason they're doing that is because something's wrong with them mentally, then we should have facilities for the people to go and be taken care of mentally. We should not allow anyone to lay on the street wintertime, summertime, no matter what the case may be, that should be something that the legislators should say, you know what, we can't have people laying on the street. We will help those people. But, you know, we can spend thousands and thousands of dollars for all kind of other silly things in this country. And that breaks my heart every time I go to Hemming Plaza and I see people just laying on the street and I take clothes and different things. When they see me coming, they run over because they know I have a bag for them. And I think instead of worrying about racism, let's look at equalism and try to be equal to everybody instead of looking at the thing that separates us, like the texture of our hair and the color of our skin. That's the only thing that separates us. Everything else, we're together, we're the same, and let's concentrate on the 99%.
Ron Davis, thanks for joining the show today.
Thank you.